Well, hey, everybody. The lighting looks really weird.
Weird lighting.
Well, remember we changed it earlier because you were moving all the RGB lights around.
Yeah, that's
so,
what it is.
So
RGBs
that's why.
Different.
There's not one in the back anymore, and that one's different, and all this other kind of crap. You know what I mean? Don't worry about it.
There you go. Those are changing color now.
Well, yeah, because we had it doing some exciting shit for something we were filming earlier.
Yep, that's so good. Let it go.
You know, it's fine. So, yeah, it's Sunday, and it's Mother's Day. So, happy Mother's Day to any of you mothers out there. I'm just a cat mom, but you know what I mean. So, So, today, we're going to be talking about, as I hinted earlier, Bad Lieutenant. Because Xanada sent us not only Bad Lieutenant, but also The Professional, which is probably, like, the next one that we're going to be doing.
Yeah.
But we actually, you know, had some cocktails last night and watched Bad Lieutenant.
It's a good movie.
It is.
It's weird.
It's actually a great movie. Well, it's Abel Ferreira, so, you know, his movies are always kind of like that. This was actually the one that he made after King of New York. So, like, King of New York with Christopher Walken came out in 1990, and then this one came out in 1992. And actually, Christopher Walken was supposed to be in this one, too. He was supposed to be the Bad Lieutenant.
All right.
But he backed out about 3 weeks before they started shooting it. And Abel Ferreira was a little put out about it.
I wonder why.
I think that he... I don't know. I think it was a thing. I saw, like, a quote earlier, like, on another thing about this where they were saying that they think that Harvey Keitel, like, it ended up working. Because Harvey Keitel was not super jazzed about it either. The story goes that he got the script and read a few pages of it and then threw it in the garbage.
Yeah. He didn't like that.
But well, he said later on, he's like, it wasn't that bad. But he, like, he read some of it, and he's like, there's no way I'm going to be in this fucking movie. Yeah. But then, like, he kind of thought about it. And then he's like, well, you know, how many chances do I get to be, like, a lead in something like this? And I have to say that Harvey Keitel, man, he fucking went for it in this. It's one of the great, just letting it all hang out acting performances. Let's call it that way. Let's call it like that. You know what I mean? Where he just not, I mean, yeah, he's naked in it and stuff, which is a very famous scene, but also just in the sense of letting himself look like the biggest fucking sleaze imaginable, pretty much, and also just opening himself up and being like just this, like this emotional devastation, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and just like howling and shit like that. So it is like a very, very brave performance, I will say that.
I think he did a good job.
He's great in this.
Yeah.
Well, the thing about it was that I saw someone, and I can't remember what the quote was, but they, when they were talking about Christopher Walken, and they're like, they weren't sure if Christopher Walken would have been the same in this, because they said that Christopher Walken was too, quote-unquote, elegant.
Yeah.
Whereas Harvey Keitel is not elegant.
Yeah.
We were talking about this last night when we were watching the movie, because Tom said the thing about Harvey Keitel is he's not a big dude.
No.
So you wouldn't think that he's super, like, be super intimidating, but there's just something about him that's just, like, really scary.
Yeah, I'm trying to place his height based on his environment and the people who are around him and, you know, long shots where you can see his feet touching the ground. And I think he's my size, about 5'6", 5'7". And he took his clothes off for that one scene, though. And he's shredded. He's I would say he was up there with fucking Charles Bronson. A lot of people don't realize Charles Bronson was shredded too. But he doesn't look shredded or intimidating in suits or in clothing. You don't know, you know. But he's definitely been on gear. Works out. When you see him with his clothes off, you're like, yeah, he probably could whip your ass.
And even, like, even if he didn't look like that, there's just something about, he's one of those actors, I guess kind of Oliver Reed was like this too, and like some of, where they just feel like they're just constantly teetering on the edge of madness, and they just like, you feel like if you met them and you pissed them off, they would just like tear your fucking head off, because there's like a little bit of crazy shit going on. It's like, he comes across like that very much.
Well, Keitel,
I'm sure he's a nice person in real life.
He's probably fun.
Yeah.
Keitel in this one, he's, playing this cop, he's, and dude's got no supervision, all right?
Clearly.
The other cops on the New York force with him, you know, they're gambling and doing shit, but they're not all that great, those guys, you know what I mean? They really don't care about the crime that's happening. There's nothing they can really do about it. They just do their job, investigating and shit. Like, you know, they find a car with some girls that have been fucking dome-checked, you know? Both of them, and
in the shot middle of up. Union Square.
Yeah, and fucking Keitel walks up and looks at him. He's just checking out the tits on the one. He's just going, look at her tits. They show that he's looking at her tits.
Yeah.
The dead body.
Which I was like.
Yeah. And then.
Keep it classy, Harvey.
Yeah, and then they go back.
Looking at the dead
body. Go back to talking
tits.
To each other about whether or not the Dodgers are going to win this World Series.
Yeah, it's not. I don't think it's the World Series. I think it's like the lead up to the World Series something. I don't know anything about sports ball. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't really give a shit either.
No,
but they're sitting there placing bets, and he's talking about how much money he's going to win. You know, and he says the Dodgers are going to win. It's a safe bet. You know, and that's really what the movie's about. He keeps falling deeper and deeper into debt because of these bets. At the end, he owes $120,000.
Yeah, that's right.
And he basically owns it to the mob. If he doesn't have the money, they're going to kill him, which they do. And they
like, well, yeah.
Yeah. And
spoiler alert.
While all this is going on, he knows all the hookers and all the drug dealers, and he's giving them evidence, or they're giving him drugs out of the evidence room and having them sell
it. Yeah, like
for
he
him.
Takes it from crime scenes and stuff. Because you see him doing that. Like, one time, like, they're like, oh, there's a key of coke in the car, and he's just like, oh, really? I'm going to go check that car out.
Yeah, and then he shows up, you know, then you see him, he's hanging out with, I guess, his two call girls, and they've got having a threesome going on, and he's just getting high and acting a fool, really, going, like he's losing his mind, because he's under a lot of pressure and shit. He's got a family, got kids, but he didn't really seem to care too much about him. He spends most of his time running around with hookers and drug dealers and shit. There's this real good-looking heroin dealer girl that he keeps visiting. She's played by the girl who I think helped write this.
Zoe Lund. She actually wrote the screenplay for this. And if you've seen Ms. 45, which is probably one of Abel Ferrara's, like, that's actually my favorite Abel Ferrara movie.
Yeah.
She plays the nun in that.
Yeah.
Sadly, because there's a scene in this, and she's quite famous, like, as a screenwriter and stuff, and sort of, you know, the hip New York kind of scene of the 80s. She was kind of big up on that. But very unapologetic heroin addict. She was pretty much, you know, kind of one of those New York artistes where she's like, yeah, she'd have heroin, what the fuck? And, like, she talked about it quite openly. So there is a scene in the film where she's mainlining heroin, and that is absolutely real. She did actually do that for the movie.
Yep, I can tell.
And, because Tom said, yeah, that looks real. And I said, I'm imagining that is real because that's Zoe Lund was a known heroin addict. And I said, she was not ashamed of it. It actually ended up killing her in the end. She died in 1999. I think she was only 37.
Yeah, and she was gorgeous.
She was a beautiful a beautiful woman, yeah.
She was a model in real life. She looks like a supermodel. Actually, better looking than a lot of supermodels. Me, a lot of supermodels look like plain. She's just super pretty. Too skinny, though. I mean,
she's very thin, yeah.
But so the bad lieutenant is visiting her and hanging out with her and buying heroin from her and stuff and doing heroin with her. I don't think they had sex though, did they?
No, not the two of them. No.
Yeah, but he's having sex with the other ones,
with the other hookers.
And he eventually comes across this case where this gorgeous nun gets raped by two scumbags, and they fuck the church up and steal a chalice. And they put a reward out for the chalice, and Keitel, he's a Catholic. But he thinks the church is a racket, though. He doesn't believe anything about it. And then he's like, why is the church put a big reward out for the chalice? They want the chalice back.
Yeah, it's like 50 grand or something.
Yeah. And Keitel's just kind of scoffing at it. He's like, man, chicks get raped all the time in New York, and the church is fucking making a big deal over this type of deal. And the other cops are like, man, you're an asshole, basically.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, well, the church is just a racket, you know. Well, eventually.
Which is true, but he's still an asshole.
Yeah, he's an asshole. But, well, he goes to see the nun. The nun smoking hot, young. Which I've never seen that in personal life. Most nuns I've
always
seen.
Well, the thing about it is, like, yeah, you kind of see nuns that are like these old, like, crotchety old ladies, but it's like they were probably young and hot at some point.
Like, they weren't in a church, bro.
I'm sure, like, some young, beautiful women, like, joined the.
Not my experience.
Well, no, but I'm just saying there had to be at least one somewhere. Sometime.
Not the Catholic Church, at least, you know, fucking.
Why would you want to do that to yourself? I mean, you know, it's like everybody's got their own thing. I get it. I'm not judging, but I'm just saying.
So
why would you subject
yourself? He goes and meets. Every nun I knew was a mean old lesbian, actually. One of them was an ex-nun. She worked for a company that I worked for. And she was a top seller, man. She was a fucking real good salesperson. Her and her wife, I guess. She was just a mean old lesbian. And then she talked bad about the church, too.
I imagine a lot of people that have. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like I said, it is.
But. They just kind of outgrow it. Anyway, so he meets the nun and they try to get details out of the nun, and she's not talking.
Even though she knows who did it.
She knows the dude's names.
Harvey Keitel, who actually, I didn't realize this. Well, I did kind of when I was watching the movie, but then, like, I wanted to make sure when I checked, like, afterward when I was researching. But yeah, he doesn't have a name. They never name him. Like, yeah. Nobody ever calls him.
Just call him Lieutenant.
Everybody just calls him Lieutenant. So yeah. It's like he's never named, which is interesting, and I'm pretty sure that was a deliberate choice, like, from a maybe dehumanization standpoint. I'm not really sure. But he goes and essentially, like, overhears her confession, you know, to the whoever. Like, I'm not real up on, like, Catholic terminology.
Yeah, the guy who's above her. The boss.
Right. Her boss. She's doing the confession, and he overhears her saying that it's like, yeah, I knew who it was. Like, they just live around here, and she knew their names because they were kids that came to that church or whatever. But she's like, but I'm not going to tell you who they are because she forgave them.
Yeah.
Even though, let's talk about this, because the rape scene in this is pretty nasty. And, like, a lot of that got cut out for some releases in certain countries and stuff, which I can see that. But, so they not only, like, it's two guys raped her, but they also, now, the crucifix, did they, like, just rape her with it, like, vaginally, or did they stick it up her butt?
It just said vaginally, for what they said.
Because I thought that. Okay. I read somewhere else that somebody said that she was sodomized with the crucifix.
Maybe they cut that part out.
But I'm not really sure.
It wasn't in
I'm
the
pretty
audio.
Sure the. Well, we saw, like, Xanadu sent us the nice, you know, Blu-ray of it. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that that's the uncut version.
Okay.
Because I heard about. Now, the cut version had, like, 5.5 minutes cut out.
All right.
They took out the whole scene, pretty much the whole scene where he jerks off in front of the two girls in the car.
Yeah.
They took out almost that entire scene.
Yeah.
Some of the rape scene, they left some of it in, but they trimmed some of it out so it wouldn't seem so quote-unquote erotic. Yeah. You know, because some people had a problem with that. So they took some of that out. They took out, you know, the part where they were obviously really using drugs. So there was that. But I think they were, like, 5 minutes took out. But all of that stuff was in the version that Xanadu sent us. Yeah. So that's assuming the uncut
version. But I don't think they mentioned any anal action.
No. I'm just saying, I don't know if just, I read that somewhere, and I was just kind of like, well, are they just, you know, projecting, or, I don't really know, but yeah.
So, she's,
but there was a crucifix
involved. Not giving up the information, and Keitel goes off and does some other shit, he's gambling some more, but he keeps coming back to this case, and keeps fucking with him. And he's like, who are you to forgive these guys? They're gonna go out and do this to some other woman, other nuns, and you know, he had a lot of good arguments, you know, about, no, let me get him, you know. And he just starts getting real frustrated, real furious about it, because she's not giving up the information. And there's a scene after she basically walks off from him, I think, in a church, right?
Yeah, because she's like, hey.
He just fucking loses it.
I forgive them, and that's, like, the end of it. Yeah. But the thing about it, it's like, I don't even think, because of how it ends, I don't think he's so much furious at her. He just can't believe it.
Can't believe it. Yeah.
He can't believe that someone could forgive something like that.
Yeah.
And so the fact that she's able to do that maybe makes him think, well, maybe I can be redeemed also, even though I'm an actual piece of shit.
Yeah. I had to see this several times. I think that I had to get my own interpretation of exactly what happens. She walks off from him and leaving him in a church, and he's just fucking losing it. He's howling.
Yeah, it's like howling.
He's howling like a fucking broken wolf and shit. And he starts cursing God and shit. And then he sees Jesus. And he's
like standing. But
yeah, and he sees him in between the pews, you know, and he's going, you fuck, what do you want? You got something to say to me?
Where were you? Where the fuck were you?
Yeah, fuck were you? Where the fuck were you?
It's pretty creepy. Like, the way they have that Jesus standing there is, like, super creepy. It creeps me out.
He's crawling towards it, you know, calling it, you fuck. He's fucking frustrated as fuck. And Jesus reaches down to, like, touch him or something like that.
Or he kisses his feet.
He's kissing his feet. Jesus reaches down to touch him like that, and he snaps out of it to some black lady there in between the pews. But she's got the chalice.
Yeah.
The chalice that was missing.
She says, somebody, like, pawned this at my...
Yeah.
husband's pawn shop.
So he was out of it, fucking losing it, seeing hallucinations, but in a way, it was like a gift from God. The chalice came.
Right.
And it kind of leads down a path of events that happened that make you think it's kind of like a story of, salvation through forgiveness, basically. But
that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, but you got to pay penance, which means you have to die for your sins.
Yeah.
He did die for his sins at the end.
I saw a review call this like a passion play.
Yeah.
It's essentially what this is.
He's like an evil Jesus.
I'd watch that movie. Okay. Evil Jesus.
An evil Jesus would have been like Barabbas. He might be like a Barabbas character.
Yeah, maybe so. Like I said, Abel Ferreira, a very, very Catholic filmmaker. Pretty much all of his movies that I know of have very, very heavy Catholic themes and Catholic imagery. And this one does too.
Yeah. No, it's probably not Barabbas. It's probably Judas. Because Judas was a traitor in many of the stories. There's a bunch of different versions of the Judas story. There was a Gospel of Judas. It's not canonized, but it's out there. But he ends up dying anyway for his sins. So he might be like a Judas.
He calls someone Judas.
Does he?
The guy, remember when they're in the bar? And the guy, I can't remember what the guy's name is, but the guy that places all his bets, like with the bookie or whatever. And he's talking to that guy, and the guy's just like, look, you know, you already are in the hole. Because he keeps saying, like, he keeps losing each game, because he's betting on each game. And he's like, no, just double the bet on the next one, and that'll, like, pay it off. You know what I mean? So he's just getting, like, deeper and deeper in the hole. And the guy keeps telling us, like, look, it's like this dude is going to fucking kill you. He's going to blow up your house, like, with your wife and kids in it if you don't pay him off. And so he says stuff like that, and then Harvey Keitel calls him Judas at that point, too. So, like I said, just like a lot of Abel Ferreira's other movies, this one is very... This is really... It's so weird because this movie is, like, really religious. Like I said, it's like a passion play, essentially, but it's also, like, super sleazy. Yeah. Like, you will need a shower afterward, probably. Yeah.
All of the characters, most of the characters, not the nun, but all the characters are sacrilegious bad people.
Yeah, they're just all scumbags. Everyone's just scumbags.
Including the cops.
They're all scumbags.
Yeah.
And, he's the worst, but, I mean, you know, but that's the thing. It's just kind of like... And the weird thing about it, because Tom's, like, watching this, because I'd seen it before, like, a long time ago. I might have seen this in the theater now that I'm thinking about it. But he's like, this movie doesn't really have a plot, per se.
It's more like a slice of life.
It's kind of like a slice of life or, like, a character study.
Yeah.
But it kind of reminds me of Taxi Driver, is what it reminds me of a little bit.
But it does, a plot does start forming out of there. It's just, it's not real obvious at first. There's a couple things going on. He's falling deeper into debt. His time is running out. His life is not gonna is not going well. He's done a lot of evil shit. All right. He's abused his own authority. He's a fucking scumbag.
Yeah, big time.
He ends up, I guess, redeeming himself, but I find it questionable. Once he gets a hold of the chalice, he's able to track down the kids that did it.
Yeah, the rapists.
Yeah, and he breaks into their apartment and gets high and holds them at gunpoint and then gets high with them.
Yeah, gives them some crack.
Yeah, they had a smoke.
He's like, hey, you want the good shit?
And then they're
like, yeah.
Yeah, and then he handcuffs them together and wraps his jacket around the handcuffs so nobody can see it. And he basically kind of abducts them in his car.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole time he's like threatening. He's thinking about killing them. But he's not, and he doesn't. He takes them to the bus station and unhandcuffs them. And says, you get the fuck out of here. And he says a lot of, basically, he's kind of glitching out. And he gives them the money that he had.
$30,000.
It was $30,000. But it was what he was originally going to pay for the bet in case he lost.
Right.
But he lost that many times over.
He got it from a drug dealer.
Got it from a drug dealer.
Right.
So he gives them the money. He's cursing them as he's doing it. Gives them the money to basically start a new life and to get it because it said, don't come back to New York. Your life is shit here, basically. And they were living in squalor.
You know? Yeah.
And they were young, I guess, 20s. So he allows them to escape New York.
Yeah. With $30,000.
He's still real conflicted about it. you know, and he walks back to his car, and he's still kind of cussing himself and cursing God and shit. Gets in the car, drives off, and stops at a light, and so fucking another car passes him and goes, "Hey, cop!" Boom, boom, boom. They shoot him up and kill him. It was over the gambling debt. They just killed
him.
Well,
yeah, because remember he discussed that. He's like, "Well, I'm going to place that bet." They were supposed to meet the next day.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that that's how the guy knew who he was. Like that they
The lieutenant knew his life was over. He knew that he wasn't going to be able to pay the $120,000.
Yeah, because he seemed just very resigned.
Yeah.
Like, because he's sitting there with the two kids, the two rapists, you know, holding them at gunpoint, smoking crack, and they're watching the game. And so, you know, the Dodgers lose, so he realizes now he's $120,000 in the hole.
Yeah,
and he doesn't get upset about it or anything. He's just very resigned. He's like, well, that's the end of that. You know what I mean? Whereas before, he was, like, freaking out. Like, he was, like, the one game that he lost... he was listening to it in the car, and he, like, shot the fucking car radio.
Yeah, shot the fucking radio.
Like, out.
And then tried to play it off. He was in downtown. He was looking like fucking what? Broadway.
Yeah.
And he's, like, in downtown New York and shit. Like, he put his siren on and laughed.
What? What are you looking at? I'm a cop. I can do whatever
he's fucking crazy.
Yeah, he's a nutcase in this.
He's crazy.
But it's a great, I mean...
Good movie.
It's a great character study. Like I said, you'll feel like really it's good. Because after the movie was over, Tom was like, wow, that was a downer.
Yeah. It's a downer.
For a Friday night. Like I said, you will definitely feel like it's a very scuzzy movie. Like it's very, like I said, Abel Ferreira, like he's kind of that gritty New York. All of this was filmed without permits. They just like showed up and, which I think he did all of his films that way. So when you see like reaction shots of like people in the background, that's like absolutely real. Those are just like real ass people just going about their New York City business. And here's Harvey Keitel shooting his car radio. So I'm kind of, I guess because they didn't have a permit to shoot that scene, I wondered if they'd be like, what the fuck is going on?
The New Yorkers can handle it, especially old school New Yorkers.
They're just kind of like,
those
whatever.
They're like, yeah, okay, all right.
That's how that shit goes. Yeah. Well, the thing about it is that. I love New Yorkers, though.
Yeah.
I love them for that reason, because they're just like,
Well, they're tough. They're not dealing with Boston. I lived there. So, I lived in Boston. So they used to go to New York all the time. There's a big difference between the places. I'd probably take New York over Boston, especially old New York. New York right now, nah. Boston right now, nah. But fucking back in the day, back in those days that this was filmed, you know, you could do more.
I'm pretty sure that the crime that's kind of at the center of this movie, which is like the rape of the nun, that was kind of loosely based on a real crime that happened in New York City in 1981, I think it was. So they actually kind of used that. So I think they had like the cop that was investigating that, like sort of consulting on the movie. Interestingly, the one scene where he pulls over those two girls that are teenagers.
Yeah.
And, you know,
supposed to be teenagers.
Well, yeah, they're supposed to be teenagers.
They're
underage. They're supposed to be underage. And they've, you know, they've been out to a club and they have taken their dad's car, like, without him knowing about it. They, you know, that's what Harvey Keitel discovers. And so, obviously, he's going to use this situation to his advantage. But it's interesting because this scene doesn't go the way you think it's going to go. Because you think that, and the way that he's talking, you're just kind of like, yeah, he's going to make one of these girls blow him.
Yeah.
And then, which it kind of seems like it's going to go that way, like the way he's talking, because he's like, you ever suck a guy's cock? You ever suck a guy? Like, he starts saying that. And so then you're like, oh shit, you know how this is going to go? But it doesn't quite go that way.
No. He just makes him simulate fellatio. Makes that one simulate fellatio while he
She has to stand there like looking like an idiot.
Yeah, and then the
like
other
with her mouth open like that. And then he's just like jerking it, like looking in the car.
And then the other girl's on her knees, turned around backwards in the passenger seat with her booty in the air.
So he can look at her
it's
ass.
Not as, the thing is I remembered seeing this when it came out, you know, and I remembered it being a lot more graphic than it really was. You see it again and you can't really see that girl's booty. I remember seeing the booty.
Yeah, because it's kind of like dark in the car.
Yeah, I thought the booty, in my mind, was pressed up against the window. You could see everything.
That was wishful thinking.
That was just how I remembered it. That's not how.
Tom imagined the booty.
Nice brown booty, panties and shit, pressed up against. That's how I remembered it. No.
You can barely see it.
You can barely see it.
Because you're looking inside the car. Yeah. You're mostly seeing things from... It's not, you know, it's not like, the thing about his movies is that they're really realistic. They're very grounded. They, you know, they don't have, like, a lot of artful shots or anything like that. They're filmed almost, I don't want to say, like, too much, like, documentary style, but almost like that. Because it's, like, guerrilla filmmaking, you know what I mean? Like I said, he doesn't have any permits or nothing. So he's just kind of, filming stuff, like, catch as catch can, kind of.
Yeah, this era of filmmaking, you know, of course, gone. You could probably have some people doing stuff like this, but not with legendary actors. I mean, fucking Harvey Keitel, even though he probably wasn't a legend then, but the legend was being built. And there, you know, I knew him from a movie that we watched right after this called Saturn III.
Yeah.
Which is a sci-fi horror
movie. Which is one of his first films. He's quite young.
He's great in it. Even though it's not his voice, they got him dubbed. But it sounds like him. It sounds like him anyway.
It kind of does. It kind of sounds like a more refined version of him. I get, and we did a review of Saturn III like a long time ago, but they dubbed his voiceover because they didn't want. They thought his like Brooklyn accent was too distracting.
Didn't make a sense. Didn't make sense. They should have just left an accent like that.
Yeah, I don't think most people.
Earth was supposed to be a fucking scum hole anyway.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. So it probably would have just played into that.
Played into it, yeah.
Because I think a lot of people have a lot of have a misperception, especially if they're not from that.
Right.
Region.
But go back and look at our review on that. It was a flawed movie, Saturn III, but it was kind of a masterpiece because it was almost hit. It parts of it were very good quality, like on par with, like, I don't know, almost kind of like Alien 1, which was, that's what it was competing with. It had good acting. Farrah Fawcett was in it. Michael Douglas.
No, Kirk Douglas.
Kirk Douglas, yeah. Kirk Douglas was in it. And he did a great job. And good, great sets.
Run around naked.
Yeah, run around. It had shitty space scenes, which they subbed them out to another kind. There was a lot of turmoil on the set, and they were running out of money. Great robot scenes and weird fucking, it was kind of like a Frankenstein story. Keitel played a cool dude, a cool bad guy. Fucking psycho, fucking incel, social media motherfucker, cyborg. Murdered a dude to get on the mission so he could fucking get a Farrah Fawcett. And he had his job was to put the damn robot together and program it mind to mind, Bluetooth connection. This is way ahead of time for the 80s, you know. But he failed the test, so that he failed the course. And that robot came up fucking a psycho thinking that it was him, thinking that it was Harvey Keitel.
Well, it had his brain tissue.
Had his. No, it wasn't his brain tissue. It was like clone brain tissue. But it was stealing thoughts from him.
Right.
It stole his personality from him.
Richard Brown said Harvey was in Taxi Driver. Oh, yeah, that's right. I haven't seen Taxi Driver in a long time.
But that's this right. He played the pimp.
That's right.
Yeah.
But this does kind of remind me of, of Taxi Driver a little bit, this movie. Because, like I said, it's more. You know, yeah, there's a plot in the sense of, you know, things happen because of other things. And there's, like, the, you know, the rape of the nun and that investigation, that kind of plays into it. And then, like, him losing all the money, like, with the subsequent events. You know, so that's kind of a through line, too. But I kind of feel like a lot of it is just, like, a study of him. Because we were watching the movie, and I said, this is, like, the very definition of, like, a downward spiral.
Yeah.
Where he just staggers from one. It's like, you know, he's on the job. It's like, you know, he goes to this one crime scene where, like, these two dudes, like, stole some money from, like, a grocer or something like that. And he basically, like, shakes them down for the money. Like, he takes the money that they stole from the from the grocery store. So, like, he does that. Then he goes, like, and fucks some hookers. Then he goes and, like, shoots up some heroin. And then he goes and drinks a fuck ton. I'm like, how is this dude still walking around? Holy fucking shit.
Yeah.
What constitution?
Well, as soon as he got up in the morning, he snorted a bunch of coke.
Right.
Yeah.
Right off his kids' pictures.
Yeah.
That was super classy.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing about it, too, and I think I noticed when we were watching this movie, is that at the end, when he takes, like, the two rapists, and they're in the car with him, and there's that whole discussion, that mirrors that, like, the same, they're in the same positions and stuff like that as his kids were. Because remember, like, at the very beginning of the movie, he's dropping his kids off at school.
Yeah.
And the way that the kids are situated in the car, you never really see the kids again, but at least those two boys. He's got a bunch of other kids, too, it looked like, because there's a couple other kids running around in the apartment. But the two boys, like, he drops them off, and the way they're positioned in the car are exactly the same way that the rapists are positioned at the end.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So, there's a lot, like I said, there's a lot of thought put into this movie. Like, Zoe Lund, she wrote the screenplay. The original version of the screenplay I heard was only 65 pages, which, you know, if you know anything about screenplays, that means the movie would be about an hour and 5 minutes. But Abel Ferreira was kind of known for just kind of taking the script and just doing whatever with it, like letting the actors improvise things and just being like, well, what are we going to do on the day and shit like that. So he was just kind of using that for suggestions. The thing about it, too, was that originally, Abel Ferreira said, he had intended this movie to be more like a black comedy. I'm not really sure, like, to what extent he meant that. Yeah, but he was like, when Christopher Walken was playing the main character. Because, like I said, Christopher Walken was in this up until literally 3 weeks before they started shooting. And then he was like, nah, I'm out. But he's like, you know, the scene with the two girls in the car, like with the jerking off and everything. He's like, that was actually supposed to be funnier. And like, it was supposed to end like with Christopher Walken, like dancing with them in the street. And like, you know, they were wearing his hat and like his gun belt and shit like that. I'm like, I'm not sure that would have worked, to be honest. I mean, I think it was the way that the scene played out, because they said they kind of let Harvey just do it like that. Oh, and I'm not sure if this is true or not, but I read this somewhere. One of the women that was playing one of the girls in the car, pretty sure that she worked for Harvey Keitel, like, as a nanny.
Okay, yeah.
And so they asked him, they're like, is this going to be weird? Because that's, like, your babysitter, right? Yeah. He's like, no, I want to try something. And I'm just like, all right. If you've seen that scene, I'm just like, now that makes it, like, super weird. But it's like, I really like the way, I don't know, I like the way he played it. It was really...
real cringy.
It was tense and cringy because you weren't really sure how it was going to go.
Yeah.
And he was just being so, like, creepy and, like, intimidating. Yeah. You're like, you just know this is going to go bad, but you don't know exactly in what
him
way.
Him standing out there in fucking New York traffic, the headlights going on, and he's out there jerking it beside this damn car, looking into, and as a plainclothes policeman.
Yeah.
It's pretty fucking creepy.
That's what I mean. Like, it's like, can you imagine? Like,
if
you
got traffic doing that shit.
Right. Like, cars are going by. And like I said, when we said that they shot this movie without any permits or anything like that, so it's like, those are real life cars, and he's just out there like, and the thing, I don't know, like, you can't really tell from the scene. I've heard, again, I don't know if this is true or not, but I've heard that another take that they did of it, like, he actually did, like, jerk off for real and, like, you know, yeah, finished all over the car. That's what I heard. But I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah,
unlikely. But I heard that was
with his babysitter in there.
I'm like, maybe that's what he wanted to try.
Maybe they had something going on.
Can you imagine if you worked? That was like your employer, and you were both actors, and then like you had to do that scene. It's like that would be so fucking awkward the next day. Yeah. Then so you had to go and like watch their kids. She's like, hey, I just saw you jerk off all over my face. That's like, that's a little weird. I don't know if that's true or not. But that's what I heard. So I don't really know. Let's see. Grampther said, I worked with some low-end types, but never as bad as the bad lieutenant. Well, Jesus Christ, I hope not.
Yeah.
This dude, every single vice you can think of, I mean, he was an alcoholic, he was a drug addict, he went to hookers, he stole money, he was, like, corrupt, he was a gambling addict. It's just like...
he victimized the fucking public.
Yeah, I mean...
he's a criminal.
Right. So it's just kind of, I was like, Jesus Christ, is there anything you haven't done that it's just, did he kill people? Did he kill anybody in this movie?
I don't remember.
I don't think he killed anybody. No. I mean, like at the end, you thought that he was going to kill the rapist because that's clearly what he wanted to do. Yeah. Like when he was talking to the nun, he was just like, let me get revenge on them. Like he didn't understand.
I got it to reset.
It came back on?
I just held both buttons down for a long time and eventually did it. Yeah. Fucking having a problem with that.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah. Stardog78 said, my favorite Harvey Keitel character was Victor the Cleaner in Point of No Return. Man, I haven't seen that movie in a long time. That's another one we need to see. Man, we're like so behind. Grampther said, in today's environment, the bad lieutenant would be fired very quickly. Well, I should hope they should have fired him back then. But I kind of feel like the other cops in this, they don't, you're led to assume that the other cops, while not as terrible as the bad lieutenant, they really don't seem to give that much of a shit. Especially the one scene near the beginning of the movie, which, like I said, those two girls get shot in the head and they're just, like, in the car dead in the middle of Union Square. And there's, you know, there's onlookers like all around, and there's all these cops, and it's just like they're looking in there going, yeah, that sucks or whatever. And then, like I said, Harvey Keitel is just like looking at her tits. But then, like, the other cops, he just walks over there and they just immediately start talking about like the baseball game and like what bet they're gonna play. So they don't give a shit about...
Well, it was just work. They see that shit all the time, but I guess is what they're just kind of hardened up to it.
Right. You know? But that's what I'm saying. It's just they didn't really seem to have... And they knew for sure that Harvey Keitel, I mean, he was the one that was putting in all the bets, like with the bookie and stuff like that. Yeah. So they knew for real that he was at least into that. I don't know if they knew about like his alcoholism or his copious drug use or anything like that, but I just kind of feel like they didn't really, I don't know. Because like I said, he was stealing drugs from crime scenes and then kind of selling it to drug dealers, or then they were giving him a cut or whatever. Because remember that one, the one scene where he goes to the crime scene, like I said, and he's like, oh, anybody looked in the car? And they're like, no. And one of his informants, I'm assuming, who's also like a sex worker, and she's like, oh, I heard there was a key of cocaine in the car. And he's like, oh, okay, I gotta check that car out. So he finds it, and then he puts it in his jacket, but then like he's kind of inebriated, and so he gets it out slips, of the car, and it falls out of his jacket, and the cop sees it, the other cop sees it, and he's just like, oh yeah, like book that in evidence. But I'm pretty sure that other cop was just like, what was that doing in your jacket, motherfucker, you know what I mean? So I kind of feel like the other cops probably knew what he was up to. But
they also knew he played it off. I don't think they really cared that much, though.
That's what I'm saying. They didn't really... like. They
prefers that they kind of did the same thing every now and then.
Right, right. Granther said, that's why this movie isn't that real. In real life, the vast majority of cops would not turn a blind eye to his bullshit. Well, I would hope. Yeah. I would hope not. Because, I mean, this dude was just a public menace. You know what I'm saying? But I have to say, too, like, I kind of agree with you on the deal with... I get that the narrative of the movie is, like, his passion play, so it's, like, him seeking forgiveness or learning to forgive others and learning to forgive himself, I think, was kind of what the point of the story was. But I think when he talks to the nun and he basically... like, she says, I forgive them, and that's, like, the end of it, and he's like, what right do you have to forgive them? Because it's like, what if they go and do this to somebody else? And I kind of agree with him on that.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't... like, because that seems a little... to me, I'm not a Catholic, so I don't really know. But to me, it seems a little self-centered.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, well, I forgive them, and, like, that's fine. Which you can do. That's cool. But I don't think that that means that they should be immune from punishment, because like I said, they're still running around loose on the street. If they did that to you, they're gonna do it again.
Yeah.
And so by not naming them, you're kind of responsible for letting them run around free, and if it happens to somebody else, that's kind of on you a little bit. Just saying. So I kind of feel like maybe that's... I don't know. So that just seemed like a very self-absorbed way of looking at things, like at forgiveness, perhaps.
Yeah, well, that's why I said he supposedly did something that atoned.
Right.
No.
I mean, it was, like I said, it's a character study, it's a personal journey for him, like I said, learning to forgive.
He was
don't let those fucking motherfuckers run
around. He was kind of caught in a rock and a hard place in a way, because if he were to have arrested them, all right, she wouldn't have testified against him. So they'd have to let him go.
So they would have had to get let go.
So he only had two choices. Let him go or kill him.
Or kill him.
And that's why that's what he was thinking about. He almost killed him, but he let him go.
Maybe that's the thing. Well, yeah, probably.
I'd have killed him. Yeah.
I probably would have too.
Yeah, you can't let him go.
Yeah, because like I said, if they went and did that to somebody else, I'd feel really bad.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? So I don't know.
Grabbers, that's why I should never be a cop. I made a good soldier, make a good fucking special operative and shit like that. I could never be a cop. I don't believe in the system. I believe in human duty and action.
Well, maybe that's like, that's like a good way of putting it, because like you said, if he had gone through the system, like they, because she wouldn't testify, even though she knew who they were, then they probably would have got off anyway, because they wouldn't have had enough evidence.
Yep.
So like you said, he only had the choice between those two things. And he's like, well, the old me would have just like shot him in the head and like not even thought about it.
Yeah, I think that's what the old, but I think he originally was going to do that.
Right, but then he thought, well, I'm going to try and be... Because, like I said, I think that the nun...
The thing is, I think that's the good thing to do, though. My interpretation of fucking morals is a lot different than other people. The right thing to do is to fucking put those two dogs down. That's the good thing. The evil thing to do is to let them go.
Yeah.
They'll reoffend.
I mean, I would imagine. And, especially something as egregious as that crime that they had committed. It would be different if it was something that wasn't that bad.
And I'm not going to say justice wouldn't be served because I'm not arrogant enough to believe in justice. I believe in vengeance. I said vengeance was not served. You know, I'm not apologetic about how I think. I'd have fucking killed both those dudes.
Like I said, not going to lie. I probably
and then went, bitch.
But yeah, so I don't know, so that was kind of one thing, but like I said, it's not, I mean, the point of the movie was is coming from a very Catholic place of forgiveness, and he's also learning to forgive himself, I guess, because like you said, he knew that his days were numbered, essentially. I think he knew deep down that he was gonna get killed that day.
Right.
And so he thought, well, what do I want my last action on earth to be? Do I want it to be like just taking out these motherfuckers, or do I want to follow the example of the nun and be the bigger person or turn the other cheek or whatever? So he wanted that to be like the last thing that he did and hope that it redeemed him, I guess. Did it? We don't know. But Jesus didn't say anything when he was standing there. That was so fucking creepy. How did they, like, was that a person? Was that a real person? Or was it, like, a statue? Or, I couldn't really tell.
Of Jesus? It was a real guy. He moved.
That was, that's right. He did kind of, like, move his hands and stuff. Because for a long time, he was just standing there really still. And he was standing, like a little bit crooked. Almost like Jesus would be, when he was on the cross.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was standing on the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
So he was standing, like, kind of crooked. So it was really unsettling.
Yeah. Well,
and then I'm sitting there looking at it going, is that a person or is, like, a statue? Like, you couldn't really tell. It was really
creepy. They had him in a religious position, like in a religious painting or in a statue. That's why he was in that weird... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Religious icons are painted or that way or something.
Yeah,
or that
like
way.
I said, that's what was so unsettling to me. It almost didn't look like it was a real person.
Oracle
says she makes the point that she can forgive them and still cooperate with making sure they face the consequences. Yeah, see, that's what she should have done. I think the problem I had, you know, yeah, it's all well and good to, like, forgive them. You could personally, you can forgive them if you want to. That's entirely up to you. But not cooperating with the police or, like, naming them so they can face consequences, so they can be punished or, like, be taken off the street so they don't do it to someone
else. She wouldn't testify.
That's, like, really irresponsible.
She wouldn't testify. Basically, she's saying that it was consensual. So you could have never gotten a conviction.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. And like I said, they did, like, I mean, and they showed in the scene, like, the scene is really uncomfortable to watch.
She said it was her duty as a Christian to be like Christ and to suffer. And that those guys
they were like an agent of her suffering.
Yeah, they were agent of her suffering. That those guys were innocent because they were the needy, and just like the needy, they're rude and blah 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 blah. And it's just no different than anything else. She rationalized it.
She did, yeah.
But
she
was wrong. Okay, just that's a very airy fairy religious way of interpreting something to make your ideology seem true. That's all it is. Making your own ideology seem true. That's what most rationale is.
To be honest, the speech that she gave in the confessional where she was talking about the needy.
Yeah.
It came off as a little arrogant.
That's what I was thinking too. Yeah. It was arrogant. Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of interesting.
She was making herself seem very important.
Yeah.
You know? And that this is an important sacrifice. But that's a lot of fucking religious mumbo-jumbo. Your own religious sacrifice and that your suffering is important. And that it validates what you believe in. You know, it's...
Like okay. I said, it seems very self-centered.
Yeah. And then you know, you're going to take it upon yourself to let these guys walk free so they could victimize another woman. And then never pay for what they did. Yeah. You know. Like I said, I don't believe in justice per se, but I believe in vengeance. I've just seen too many people fucking just blown up or killed for nothing, you know. And then people that deserve it not get it? No, I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
Yeah, I wasn't. But like I said, I think that was kind of the point, though.
Yeah.
Strong 78 said, supposedly Zoe Lund, who, like I said, was the writer, was a victim of sexual assault when she was real young. Yeah, I heard that too. So I always felt the key to understanding the movie was through the nun. Yeah, and she wrote a lot of those lines, I think. She wrote a lot of her own lines, because she was in this, too. She played, like, the heroin dealer or whatever. But, she kind of wrote all of that stuff. And I'm not sure, like I said, I'm not sure if she intended, like, the nun to come off like that, but that's how she came off to me. But like I said, I'm not Catholic. Stratog78 said, I am Catholic, but I agree with Tom and Jenny.
Yeah. Yeah. Bitch gotta pay. You know, and that's really at least,
so they don't make other people suffer. Yeah. I think that's the main thing.
I guess you could say, well, the Bible would say in some places that the vengeance is mine. You know, that the Lord, not yours. In other words, that the Lord metes out the fucking punishment. But then they'll turn around and just prescribe punishment for other people for breaking rules and shit. So, no, in Christianity, you should punish people for the evil shit that they do.
Yeah.
It clearly says
and
that.
Like I said, I don't, and we've talked about this before, because particularly in regards to somebody like Carl Panzeram, where I don't think that you should put people in prison and, like, make them suffer horribly as well, just because that's going to make them worse, particularly if you want to release them back into society. But I don't think that you should let them run, like, people like that run around free either.
There's some people that can't be released.
To victimize other people. Yeah, and that's the thing.
Yeah.
Just keep them away from other people. That's all I'm saying.
Any kind of aggravated rape like that? No, they can't be released.
Yeah, because I mean that was bad. Yeah. That was bad. Like what they did to her.
They'll do it again.
But that's what in the context of the movie, it had to be bad because it had to like shake Harvey Keitel's character out of his holy shit. If somebody can forgive that, then, you know, maybe there's hope for me, like, redemption for me because look what she forgave.
Yeah.
That was like super fucked up. But still, like I said, I'm not a Catholic. I wasn't raised Catholic, and I understand that like people that were raised Catholic, they have like a particular thing, and they have like a particular mindset that because I've known some that were like lapsed Catholics, but a lot of times that mindset that it never really goes away. I feel like completely, you know, especially if you were raised with it.
Richard Brown says the Old Testament God was vengeance. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Basically. And then if you really look at the covenant that Yahweh or El Shaddai, depending on whatever role he was in at the time, the covenant between him and Israel was basically like a gangster's fucking covenant. There was no choice. I choose you. You do this. If not, I fucking smite you. You know. But the original Hebrew God is a demiurge, basically, a devil God. He's the devil and God combined. He's a creator and a destroyer. Can reward and punish. Did some weird shit, though. Fucking killed Moses before even fucking finding the promised land. Just for not believing. Remember that?
God's kind of an asshole.
Yeah, got him out of Exodus, took the people out of Egypt and everything. It was just a very gangster God. He was more like a devil in the Old Testament. And it's not just me saying that. Fucking the original early Christians from the fucking second century and everything, in their original canonized Bible, it basically said that Jesus' God was a new God, and that the old God was the devil, basically. That was, what was the Book of Marcion. That was the original New Testament. But then the New Testament that you have today and you believed in was written as a direct response to the Book of Marcion that came out and fucking redeemed the Old Testament God. Oh, no. The old Jewish God, we're not throwing that away. He was good, too. We're going to combine that. But this is the form of Christianity that we inherited, was the one from New Testament. I agree with Book of Marcion more than, or what we know of it. It's been purged out. But the descriptions of what was in the Book of Marcion, we pretty much know. And it said that Yahweh, or El Shaddai, which is God Almighty, or Father of the Gods, he was a demiurge. A devil God. Jesus' God was a fucking universal cosmic God. And in the Book of Marcion, Jesus was never anything. I don't think Jesus was anything that was ever born. I think he was a celestial being, like Gabriel.
Stardog78 said, Old Testament was the divine justice god. New Testament was golden rule god. Choose your testament. Choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
I like
that. It's narrative, man. It's narrative.
Yeah. American Military 100 says, speaking of movies with Catholic and religious themes, The Exorcist Believer bombed at the test screening. Audiences booed and some walked out. I wonder why. I haven't really heard anything about that one, so I don't really know how that's going to go, but I don't know. I keep saying, like, we're going to see stuff when it comes out, but we haven't seen any new stuff.
Oh, I still want to see the new Exorcist, people booed it?
Well, it was at test screening, so I'm not really sure. Like, it might still be in that stage.
That's the Pope's Exorcist?
No. That's already out.
Okay.
That's
not the one you're talking about.
No. This is a new one.
Okay.
But, yeah, this movie here, getting back to Bad Lieutenant.
Yeah.
I think it premiered at Cannes, and pretty universally loved, I feel like. Critics were really into it, like, compared it to early Martin Scorsese. I read, actually, Roger Ebert's review. He fucking loved this movie. And he said what I was thinking about it. He's like, Harvey Keitel, it's like, you don't usually see an actor of that, that's that famous, or, you know, of that caliber, like, just letting it all hang out like that. And so you really kind of have to, and like I said, he didn't want to do it at first. Like, when he first read the shit, he's just like, yeah, no.
It's good acting.
I don't know if I really... But, I mean, I can't imagine anybody else in that role now. Yeah, I can't imagine
it. It's good acting, and you can kind of imagine, like, sometimes, you know, you can imagine yourself when you're in the dumps. You're like, yeah, it's kind of like that guy. You know, I'm feeling like that guy. You know, I understand.
Hopefully you never have a day like Bad Lieutenant. Yeah. Holy shit.
He's fucking howling like a wolf.
I mean, I get that. Making the faces and stuff. I was like, man.
Worried about all that debt he's accruing from.
Many times during the film, I was like, man, Harvey's having a rough time.
Yeah.
He's having a rough time.
Yeah.
And, like, many times, too, I was just kind of like, here he goes again. Like, he's just going from one thing to another. Like, he's at a club, like, doing shots, and then he's like, snorting, like, bumps of cocaine, and he's, like, doing heroin. I'm like, how is this guy still on his feet? Holy shit. I just can't even imagine how somebody could do all that stuff and still be, like, walking around and functioning and talking and stuff. Mm. Like, he was still, you know, he was kind of out of it, but not really. Like, he could still drive a car and shit. But I was like, man, that dude's got, he's hardcore, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But, well, it's 7 o'clock. Let's go ahead and shut this down, Jim.
Okay.
We got a bunch of shit we got to do tonight.
Yeah, there is. We do.
And I still got to transfer all the damn files.
Yep, all the shit we shot today. Yep. By the way, if you didn't notice, I actually put up two videos today. I put one over on my Crime and Memorial channel, which was about Valerie Percy, the murder case from 1966, unsolved. And I also put up a movie review on Flickers of Fear that was Tombs of the Blind Dead from 1972, the Spanish cult horror film. So if you haven't seen those or you didn't notice that I put those up, then, you know, go check them out because that would be cool. I didn't know if anybody saw that I put them up. I just put them up not too long ago. So everybody have a happy Mother's Day out there, what remains of it. Tomorrow's Monday, so it's going to be a Haunting Mondays. We're actually going to be doing, I think it's called Back from the Grave. That was the next one on the thing, because we're still doing season 5. So I think it's season 5, episode 7, and I'm pretty sure it's called Back from the Grave. Not Echoes from the Grave, that's a different one. This is Back from the Grave, so that's the one we're going to do. So if you want to watch it ahead of time so you can play along with us on the show tomorrow night, then then go ahead and do that. American Military 100 said Exorcist Believer is a sequel to The Exorcist with Ellen Burstyn reprising her role. Oh yeah, I remember hearing about that. Oh shit. Okay, well, we'll have to see how that goes then, because I can't believe that. That's right, I heard they were doing that with her in it. But yeah, so thank you everybody for dropping by. Thank you, Xanada, again for sending us the movie. We'll be doing The Professional too the next time we do a movie review, because we got to watch that as well. So yeah, we will see you guys again tomorrow evening. Good night.